Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast. After what's been a difficult few days for everybody in the cycling world, after on Friday morning, unfortunately, after the big crash on the descent of the Albula Pass, Bahrain announced that Gino Maeda had passed away that morning, which is incredibly sad. And yeah, like everybody, all the guys that reached out to me that raced with Gino or roomed with Gino or friends with Gino said that he just was like, well, a really, really nice guy. And anyway, we've got an article from the Neue Zürcher Zeitung linked down below. And I might let you take over some of the details, Benji, for what happened after that in the next few days.
Yeah, let's be honest about it. Like, for cycling fans, this hits as a brick, news like this. We've gone through it with the likes of Wouter Weiland in 2010, 2011 in the Giro, then Jorge Lambrecht in Tour de Polonia, and every single time it's just a nightmare that happens for a cycling fans. And for a cycling fans, it happens as a nightmare, but I can begin to imagine what it feels like for the team, for the family and friends of Gino, that... Yeah, he's out there. He's our hero on the bike. Lots of cyclists are our heroes on the bike. And then he's not there anymore. So it's hard to accept that.
Yeah, so our thoughts are with Gino Maeda's family, with the team, with Bahrain. An exceptional cyclist, as they said. Extremely talented. Winning the Young Riders jersey at the Vuelta. Stage in the Giro at his home race in Swiss in 2021 as well. That was a really exciting stage, and fifth in the Vuelta whilst helping Haig come third on GC. And he was on the up and up, fifth in Paris-Nice this year, and just devastating news for somebody who had an interesting life and perspective on life outside of cycling. Wasn't just a cyclist. You read some of the stories about his... He found a stray dog in Bilbao and named it after Pale Bilbao. How he donated to, I think, Diggity, to Plant Tree Foundation, and was conscientious about the environment. So just a real shame. And yeah, but the family wanted the race to go on, or with their agreement, the race went on. Stage six to Lely was neutralized, and the Bahrain team rolled across the line after that. And then stage seven, Benji, they bit of a hybrid stage where they half neutralized, well, almost 75% neutralized it, right?
Yeah, it's like, at first I was like, what are they doing here? As in terms of, I don't understand what's happening. Supposedly the last 25 kilometers would be neutralized. And I'm like, what's the point of racing for the initial part then? But it was only the GC that was neutralized. So it's a logical decision. And basically, at roughly 25 kilometers to go, before the climb started of that stage, the hill started of that stage, the times of GC were taken, and the stage was still fought for. But let's be honest about it. Whoever was going to be the winner would be giving it towards Gino. And that ended up being Remco Evenepoel, who attacked from a group of like 20 riders, I think, that got away on the hill. And that's kind of it. And it's like, I think it was also Remco that had a solo in Bologna 2019. I don't know if it was after Jakobsen's crash or after Lambrecht's accident. I don't know if that was 2019 or 2018 or something. Generally can't remember. But it's like, he's done this a few times now where he's given his victory to someone. So it's all also nice to see.
Yeah, that was cool from Remco. And I think... you saw him speaking to Gino's family, and like, he's a big rider and the world champion, honoring Gino was nice to see. And if the stage is the last 25 Ks to be raced, then of course everyone makes their own decision. They can be raced or they can race if they want to race. Some guys obviously left the race. Tudor, I believe, all left the race. Some Swiss riders and other riders left the race. Antimarché as a whole left the race. Even before the news broke on Friday morning, Binny seemed really shaken up, actually, and was like, I'm not sure we should be racing. Yeah. That was just how he felt. Like, so, yeah, just...
Everyone moves differently. So I will never judge a rider for stepping out of the race at that point or not feeling like racing or not feeling like doing anything because they probably just want to hug a family member at that point and kind of rest for a bit, be out of it for a bit until the next race. And if there's people that want to race and feel like that's their way to go, I also wouldn't judge that. So anyway, we ended up at a time trial today.
Oh, some other news. Sheffield, okay, who had also been in that crash, but not in the same crash. He crashed before down into that ravine. He escaped magically or luckily with almost no superficial injuries, just bruising and a concussion. He was released from hospital yesterday, and he also said in a press release this morning he'll go home and he'll be monitored by the team and doctors. So hopefully Sheffield recovers from this okay, gets a lot of support. Obviously a horrendous crash. We won't talk about safety this, safety that. I prefer to have that discussion maybe in the off season from a more helicopter view, not just focusing on this crash in particular. But yeah, just the worst thing that's ever happened since we started covering cycling, honestly. Like, we weren't doing the podcast when Lambrecht passed away, and this just... I just cried all Friday, man. It was just so bad. Bad. But yeah, the TT.
The thing is, like, I can't even watch those, like, stages that come afterwards where the team then rolls over the line. I just can't get to doing that. But let's focus on the TT to get our minds off of it a tiny bit, to try and find the beauty in our sport a bit. And in today, we had a time trial, and the lineup before the time trial, let's talk about that for a second. Let's set the scene before we get into it, was that Skjel Moser was still leading GC by 8 seconds on Felix Gall, who would be irrelevant today because he'd lose like 17 decades on this time trial. A user on 18 seconds in GC, and Evenepoel on 46 seconds. Those are the riders we are looking at for a potential victory in GC. And the time trial is quite, it's not completely flat. It's in total 25.7 kilometers, and let's say that the first 60% is relatively flat. Then we've got a climb, which is 1.6 kilometers at 8.2%. Bit of a plateau on top before we descend towards the line. And I was curious how you thought about this. Looking at the time trial, Remco had to take 1.8 seconds per kilometer back. At the first time trial, he took 1 second per kilometer back. I thought Remco, that would be hard, too hard for Remco. And next to that, I didn't necessarily expect a Yuzo to be outrageous today, which, oops. But the reason for that is that the Roman DTT that he won was more climbing, more descending. So his advantage over people on the flat terrain, his disadvantage on people on the flat terrain wasn't as important. But today he knocked it out of the park.
I thought Skjelmers was fucked, honestly. I thought he's in the leader skin suit. He's struggled in the shorter TT on stage one. I thought Remco or Ayuso both would leapfrog him, and I thought he would finish third on GC, actually, on this stage. I thought everything was counting against him. Now, it's a really challenging TT because of that climbing. Now, it is fast over 50 kph to T1, but the winner of this TT is 47 kph average with that sort of quicker downhill section and a descent at the end. So it's a very challenging time trial. I think that actually did end up playing into the hands of Skjel Moser. There was other, I think Gull we knew would fall out of the top three. I'm not sure where he ended up eventually, but you know, this actually turned into this turned up into one of the most interesting battles for the podium where anyone could finish first, second or third that we've actually seen in a World Tour stage race in the final time trial this year, except for maybe the Giro with Almeida, Roglic and Thomas, actually. But this was really, really close. And to T1, Remco, as expected, smoking it. 53.5 km in our average, the faster section, the faster the better for Remco. And that first TT where he did smoke Skjel Moser, that was a 57 kph average TT. But he was only 5 seconds ahead of Ayuso there, but 24 seconds ahead of Skjel Moser. So at T1, Ayuso was already virtually ahead of Skjel Moser on GC. And then we see T2, Ayuso has smoked the climbing section and he's now 6 seconds ahead of Remco. So he's gained 11 seconds on him from T1 to T2. And then on the finish, actually gains another 2 seconds on the descent, which is not actually a bad descent from Remco. Could have been worse. He wins the stage, Juan Ayuso, with a time of 32.25. Just trying to look. Oh, that's wrong from Ludvigsen. It said Matthew Dinham. It was the quickest from T1 to T2. But then, yeah, Schelmoser smashed that T1 to T2, the climbing section. Remco was much slower than both of them. And Schelmoser also was the fastest from T2 to the finish. So this T2 is basically in three parts. Fast section start, climb, technical descent, high-speed descent, where you've got to move that TT bike around. And as I said, Ayuso wins the stage, beating Remco by 8 seconds in the TT. Schelmoser is third on the TT. Third, only 9 seconds behind Ayuso and 1 second behind Evenepoel. And that's the biggest neg split I've ever seen, Benji. He just smoked that climb.
He absolutely smoked it. And yes, the climb matters a lot. Yes, the descent matters a lot. And we saw on that 3 days ago now on the descent that Schelmoser took so much time back on people in that descent. He's a really good descender, Schelmoser. Notably good descender. Yeah. He was descending better than Bilbao, which when I was watching, I thought Bilbao was going fast, but it was Schelmoser that was going fast. And he shows that in this descent once again. I was expecting Ayuso to take time on everybody in this descent. I was expecting Remco to have the okay time trial that we kind of saw on the first day. I didn't expect him to end up winning GC necessarily, but I would also say next to Schelmoser's above expectations TT, that Ayuso's TT was also above expectations.
Yeah, Ayuso winning this, he certainly wasn't the stage favorite. Now, I do think it's a parkour that really suits him, and he seemed to pace it pretty steadily. Like, he wasn't even he was the third fastest on the climb. He wasn't that much quicker on the climb than, say, Callum Scottson. And he was 9 seconds slower than Schelmoser on the climb. But just, yeah, consistent pacing from him. And, yeah, I got to say, Schelmoser winning GC, holding onto the TT with Ayuso doing a TT like that. If you said Ayuso is going to beat Remco for the stage and Schelmoser will hold on for GC, I would have thought that was very, very, very unlikely. But, yeah, I mean, it goes to show, like, to T1, whether he was going as fast as he could and he's just slower because he can't push 53 kilometers an hour like those guys or what, it goes to show that the slower the TT, the better for him.
Yep, exactly. But I would say that once again, we get to the same discussion that we got to in the majority of time trials this season, which is, yes, Wout van Aert has not been in the greatest form this week. Let's put that on the front step first, but Kelderman has been in good form this week. And Kelderman's time trial, let me check to be certain, he's 12th at the end. Is it also because of the initial negative split that it looks that bad? Or would you say that it once again shows a bit of a thought of, oh, I expected kind of better from Jumbo riders in general in time trials this year?
I mean, 31st at T1, I really think over 50 kilometers an hour, that their setup has a problem. All right, because unless that he had a really aggressive pacing plan like Schelmoser, and listen, he was 8th from T2 to the finish, the plateau and the descent. So it wasn't like he was blowing up at the end. So maybe he was getting quicker, but he's going for GC. He does still end up 4th on GC, but he averages 50.8, and he's literally 38 seconds slower than Remco and 33 seconds slower than Ayuso, but also 14 seconds slower than Schelmoser, who was quote-unquote crawling and who's small on that.
Yeah.
So either it's the plan, but to me, on the flatter high-speed TTs, the Jumbo performances haven't been as dominant this year. And in fact, like Van Aert, 6th at T1, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Again, he set a pretty conservative pacing. Oh, it seems like he's 10th from T2 to the finish, so maybe he just didn't have the legs. That could also be the answer. He was 7th on the climbing section. But for Bissiger, I never would have thought, Benji, on a hilly TT, for Stefan Bissiger to beat Wout van Aert, that's really surprising to me. On a TT over 30 minutes in duration as well, that's, even on flat 30-minute TTs, I'll always take van Aert over him. So for Bissiger to beat him by 5 seconds, and then Asgreen only 8 seconds behind, it's either, you can say Wout had bad legs, but I don't know. That T1 should be better.
Exactly. And I feel like it's an overall team where we've now set this, like, for the majority of the time trials this season. Yes, there's been a few exceptions where a Jumbo rider does a good time trial. Like, Vingegaard Dauphiné was not terrible. That was okay. That was a time. Yeah. Like, we expected him to perhaps win the stage because Bjerg overperformed. But it was still an okay time trial. Monte Lussari doesn't really fit because it's obviously a climb, so the climbing kicks in instead of the flat aerodynamics and so forth. But I'm also thinking, like, we're thinking of this from the perspective of Jumbo-Visma. We've spoken a few times about the perspective of other teams. Maybe other teams adapted better to the changes in TT bike position regulations at the start of the season. I'm obviously not an expert in that. I know some of the changes, but I would expect that Jumbo would also be good enough at doing those changes. Anyway, I don't know what the reason is, man.
I don't know. But to me, it's like, Kelderman's a decent time, you know, professional time trialist, and he's as the same speed. He's slower than Pidcock or Jonny Zagira. He's slower than Kjær Nøtebrooks, who, you know, is not a good time trial rider.
Yeah.
To T1. So I don't know.
Mate.
I don't know.
Talking about young talent, you're going to be loving this. Romain Grégoire, 11th at the end of this time trial. Yes, big negative
second
split.
On the descent.
That's fucking good, huh? Second on the descent. Are you proud?
I am, because he should be going on the tour. Dude, Côte de Piquet, right?
Yeah.
In Tour de France stage one. Whack it. Okay, you're going to be there with Alaphilippe, Vingegaard, maybe Poggi, maybe Yates, maybe Van Aert. And you got a descent. Happy days. And then a 5% finish. It's actually criminal they're not taking the kid. Like, he is so good. He's signed till the end of 2024, so... I'd try see if he wants to move. But yeah, he's unbelievable talent.
He might need an agent by then, so.
Yeah, like, he's, do not be surprised if he just rocks up and, like, wins Flesh next year or something ridiculous.
It's possible. I don't know about Flesh. It's possible, but I could also see him just doing it at LBL straight up, because he has that kick in a group.
Yeah. His sprint is, he has a big, big kick on him.
Yeah.
Just around out the top 10, Catania, Sobrero, Fisher Black, Powerless. That wasn't too relevant for GC. Poor old Felix Gold lost, like, he came 80th out of 95 on this TT. He looked like on the climb he was completely blown up. Lose a lot of GC positions. So GC, Schelmoser wins GC 9 seconds ahead of Ayuso. I'll go back to Schelmoser in a second. Evenepoel third. On 45 seconds, Kelderman fourth, Bardet fifth. Kelderman will be happy with that after the Toronto crash. Uran sixth, Oosterbrooks another GC World Tour top 10. Goal falls from second to eighth, which we suspect might happen. Dylan Turns actually ninth. And Tejada, one for the books too, from Astana, 10th.
By the way,
so yeah.
Who deserves the Zubeldia prize of the stage more? Turns or Tejada?
Turns. Tejada was in, I noticed him a few times. Just the commentators didn't know who he was.
I noticed Turns once when he was riding for, with Evenepoel in that descent for a bit.
That's the only time I noticed Turns. Yeah.
Otherwise, I didn't know he was here. So
I don't know if he had a camera with the TT today, or maybe he went earlier and I didn't see him. Schelmoser, Benji.
Yeah.
Wins a World Tour stage race after winning Tour de Luxembourg last year and second in Flesh this year. I thought he was going to be more of a punchy guy who really wouldn't climb well enough to win a race of this caliber. And, you know, he came into Basque Country in brilliant form with four top tens in the first five stages. And then they got to the real climbing stage and he got absolutely smoked and lost 4 minutes and fell 14 spots from the podium to 17th on the Ibar stage. But this year, this Tour de Suisse, I got to say, he didn't put a single foot wrong. So he wasn't, he attacked across to goal, won the stage on stage three. He was no good on stage four, rode so passive. And then stage five kind of did the same thing, where he always seemed completely in control of his GC gaps and who his gaps were to, who his main threats were, how to manage the stage, the parkour coming up. Okay, the Albula pass, he backed himself to take time back on the descent and then actually surge at the end. I can't remember him looking even flustered once this race.
That's true. I loved the tactics that he did in that stage where he on purpose did not respond to Gull because he thought, let's put him in the jersey, but also next to that because he doesn't care about Gull because of the time trial, which clearly ended up being proven. He was right to not chase Felix Gull that day, clearly. But it's also that he's so versatile in the sense that you said, second at Flesh, for example, top 10 at both Amstel, I think, and LBL, which makes me think, like, when something like this happens, when we have a rider like this, I'm always thinking, what type of rider is he is? As in, what rider from the past can we compare him to? And, like, I kind of don't know. It's like...
Rui Costa?
I was more leaning to Fuglsang, but, like, in some shape or form.
Because Costa's never performed in the big one days, right? Yeah.
I don't know.
He came fourth in Liège. He could podium Liège. Costa. Oh.
And he won worlds, also a good one day.
Yeah. I think Costa, Pete Costa, who also won Swiss Rider, was that someone else? He always seemed to do well in Switzerland. I think Costa's not a bad comparison. Same with Fuglsang. In fact, Costa was good on the big mountain stage here when he was going to win the stage.
What is the next step? He's doing the Tour de France. When it comes to the team of Trek at the Tour de France, I think Mollema recently said that he's not even sure he's going to be in the selection yet. I'm pretty sure Schelmos is going to be there. I'm pretty sure Ciccone is going to be in there. I feel like Ciccone might end up... I don't know if he's going to be in GC threat mode yet, because I recall him not being
top of the
line in Dauphiné. Peterson's going to be there with Stuyven and Alex Kirsch for sprints and potentially mingle with Green a tiny bit. Juanpe, maybe? I like it. I would love it.
He did the Dauphiné.
He's going to do it. But anyway, like, if you think about that, should Schelmos straight up ride for GC? Yeah.
He should ride for, you know, top 10 on GC. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing, right? Like, is this the chance before he becomes really big and has to be forced to ride for Grand Tours? Is this the chance he has to actually go for a stage from the breakaway? Because it's going to be difficult to beat Alaphilippe and guys like that in stage one.
It's kind of like the way McNulty wasn't able to go for stages because he was straight up a GC rider. And then we saw the same pattern. Actually, like, Mathieu Jorgensen, he had the tour last year where he had three times fourth, I think, on a stage. And then we look at this Tour de France, he's going to be next to Maz. And going into this Tour de France, I'm like, Maz is going to be all-out leader. But I do feel like they should keep Jorgensen up there.
Yeah, and they probably will do that. I mean, Mas said apparently he was hiding the fact that he had diarrhea at the Dauphiné and he wouldn't tell the team.
Really?
And then eventually they found out, and that's why he was shit, pardon the pun. It's like, what's going on there? Anyway.
Communication is key.
Yeah, if he shouldn't. So that makes sense. If he had diarrhea, maybe the French food doesn't agree with him and that's why he only performs in Spain. Who knows? Maybe, I mean, the Tour de France starts in the Basque Country, so he can get some pinchos and whatever. And then it's in Bayonne as well, which is, you know, you can get French Basque food. So I'm thinking it could be okay. And then in the Alsace region, stage 20, German influence, he might be all right. He might be all right. We'll see. I agree. Jorgensen, frankly, looked better than him. But he also had the bad crash. Well, not a bad crash, but the crash affected him in the Dauphiné.
Yeah.
I don't know what they'll do with Schelmoser. Ciccone, I thought the Dauphiné performance was so impressive that I think he should ride for GC because top five. Yeah, I thought that Dauphiné stage 8 was incredibly impressive performance.
I agree, but his consistency that week wasn't there because he was out of GC already. So it depends on whether he can stay in GC. So Schelmoser and Ciccone should both go for GC separately. And if they drop out, third week mountain stage, go for the stage.
So I'm a real try for GC for as long as possible, but then I really believe, and this is where teams make the mistake and don't have the gumption. Once it really starts,
what the fuck is a gumption?
Gumption, the guts. or the cojones.
Okay.
Once you get to 3 minutes, 4 minutes before you've even had a real GC day, go to 9 minutes like O'Connor. Go to 8 minutes or something. And then you can even take back time. Then you just got to go straight into O'Connor 2021 mode. But lingering and gradually losing time, never getting a breakaway, is kind of miserable. So I don't know, but I really rated that Ciccone last stage in the Dauphiné. And just like Remco, Benji, which will segue, that's a segue to Remco, like Ciccone didn't have much training before the Dauphiné because of his Giro.
Right.
Yes?
I want to talk about one more thing before we discuss Remco. I want to bring this up. There's this Remco dude on Jayco. His name is Willi Hagos Berge.
Hagos Willi, yeah.
That dude rode a really fucking good Tour de Suisse.
In the mountains, yeah. He was good.
16th in GC.
And his TTs, I presume, were, you know, horrendous. I have to check.
54th? Average, mid.
So yeah, he lost 2 minutes on the TT today. That's actually all right. Beat Engelhardt, which I know Luke, our producer, that's his favorite rider. He says he'll win the Tour.
His favorite rider.
Jayco seemed to be coming good. But yeah, we'll talk about Tour of Slovenia in a second.
Are you telling me that you're roasting our producer without him having any chance to fight back?
Correct. Well, no, when Engelhardt wins like the Grosse Preis Antons 1-1 Swiss race next year, he'll be like, we have to do a whole emergency podcast for it and we'll have to do it. So that'll be my mea culpa. No, Engelhardt is a decent rider. Okay. Remco Benji. To quote Mike Tyson, I didn't even train for this fight. Didn't even train for this race. Didn't knock everybody out like Mike Tyson did.
Yeah.
I actually think this ended up being a good idea. Because he fucked up the first mountain stage. And he had to learn.
Yeah.
He had to learn. And, okay, like, no one's going to look back on this Tour of Swiss and think of anything else apart from the passing of Gino Maeder. But the big picture reason why they sent Remco here was to learn for GC in a serious, mountainous World Tour stage race, which you will not get at Belwaas of Belgium to, and that's why they sent him here. And I think he's learned something.
Based on what he heard from Patrick Lefebvre, he went here because he wanted to go here and didn't take the money of Belgium Tour instead. But that being said, I think this was a better choice than the Belwaas of Belgium Tour because this is his future. GC is his future. Not the GC in a 1 week Belgian race that doesn't have mountain that's built on hills that Van der Poel would have torched him on anyway. But
the kid is fire there though. The leader's jersey at Belwaas Belgium Tour, one of the best.
I don't like it.
Oh come on, man.
We're fighting on this, I'm afraid. But one more thing. You spoke about the Remco in Tour de Suisse. I think there's also the factor of the guy got sent home from the Giro early and just wants to race some races. Is that not an underrated thing? Because if you're missing out on race days and you're so hyped to start racing, aren't you like, come on, guys, I just want to ride a bloody race. Like, I don't give a fuck what Remco's form is like. I agree, but based on his form in this race,
get
I also
three whole extra weeks. It's 2 weeks longer. 2 weeks extra racing for free.
There's one in September as well. August, September, or something that...
Do we know what he's doing? That was my question. Do we know what he's doing
yet? Belt was rumored, I think.
We know Worlds for sure. Worlds, TT Road Race, that's locked in, of course.
Sorry, but if he doesn't do Velta this year, it's a year thrown in the bin.
If he wins Liège and Worlds, no, come on, that's a bit much.
Nah, he won Liège and Worlds last year. We got to step it up. We got to get all three again.
Why can't he do Worlds, Velta, Lombardia? Is that impossible?
Why are we not asking why he cannot do Bingo Bongo Tour instead? Because it's back.
Yeah, but that's not a real, like, that's a GC race. That's not preparing you for Tour de France 2024. as much as we love the Holden Kilometer. Is that in Belgian Tour only?
You're right.
That's back. Yeah. So we don't know, but we know Remco. I actually think the World's TT course is not good for him because his cornering on the TT bike is bad. He lost Worlds last year because of that. And in the TT, and but yeah, Wout's not looking too crash hot in the TT at the moment either. So Stefan Kung, maybe Stefan Kung, who won the stage one here and is very, very good on technical courses, moving his TT bike around. Is that all from Tour de Suisse, Benji? Do you have anything else from the race?
Not really. It's a race that is overshadowed by the shitty shit that happened, and therefore I'd rather not remember this race, to be honest.
Yeah. In Tour of Slovenia, we had actually very, we had basically one GC stage. The first two stages were won by Dylan Groenewegen in sprints against Moschetti and Bauhaus, both on the podium those days. Stage three, Ida Schelling won like a hilly sort of sprint ahead of Mezgets, who's actually looking in good shape. He did good lead outs for Groenewegen. I think Mezgets has been quite good. Now, stage four was the only GC day, and it had two hard climbs. The Col of Vrat, 10.1Ks, 9% back-to-back. That's a very difficult 30-minute climb before a descent to the finish in Kobarid, from starting in Ljubljana. And Jayco were bossing, and they have this rider, Jesus David Pena, who frankly has not performed well on the team. He's a Colombian 23-year-old. On 2021, he came second in a mountain stage in the Baby Giro, but then nothing really else. In 2020, not too much else. And then 2022, he raced 16 days, no top 50s. And these are in Tour de l'Avenir, Saskatoon, Castilla y León. Like, these are not, mm-hmm. not big races. And so we've not seen him. And then even the start of this year, like Coppi Bartoli, DNF, Giro de Sicilia, which is a very, very soft 2-1, 77th, 78th. And then he comes here, Benji, and he's whacking this last climb for Zana. And Zana's good. He just won Giro Mountain Stage. So I think he's had injuries. He must have had injuries to race 16 days. So there's been something wrong.
Is there the... Yeah. Unseen aspect that we don't see as cycling fans, but for example, let's say that in 2021, while he was doing Giro U23 and so forth, that he was probably still training in Colombia for quite a bit. I don't recall which team he was on that year. Colombia, no, he is not on the list, so I can't tell you what team he was in that year. But is there the aspect that he needs to adapt to living in Europe for the next 2 years? And I think Contreras had issues with that once he was a teammate of Gaviria back in the day at Quickstep. That didn't really work out. And is that a thing that could happen?
It could be all those things. Looking at his Instagram just quickly, I recognize that road. So he's been living in Andorra recently. Mm-hmm. And I think, Luke, our producer, said in 2022 to 11, he ripped his meniscus. So he suffered from injuries.
Yeah.
That's an explanation for 2022. And he's young, 23. And anyway, the stage, he basically was leading out Zana. Zana went clear, and then there's a descent to the finish, and Zana crashed somewhat terrifyingly. It was a blind corner, and every guy, you see Zana coming to this corner, he's on the inside of the road, basically going straight. And then he gets this corner, he's like, fuck, and just runs into this field. Luckily, no drop-off. There's a horse in the field. It is somewhat comedic, thankfully, because Zana wasn't hurt. And the horse goes bolting. Not as fast or as far as the Strada Bianca horse.
You're a horse specialist.
Yes.
I'm curious. So Zana rides through the the rope fence by the side of the road. Does anyone fix that, or is the horse gone forever?
They kind of just chill in their field anyway. Like, they know about. I mean, if it's in there, it depends, like, where you're moving them around. I mean, yeah, ideally. I mean, horses try to injure themselves, like, that's their hobby, is, like, do you come back, they're just injured, they've just run to a fence or something, so I don't know. I presume they let whoever owns the land or horse know, and they're fixed. That fence, to be honest, like, look at that fence ain't doing much to stop a 350-kilo horse, like, it's like a bit of ribbon. So, anyway, Zana just straight up rolls up, gets his bike, but his teammate, Jesus David Pena, came back and actually won the stage ahead of Zana in second, who was caught by Ulisi and Lorenzo Fortunato. So a double whammy for Jayco.
Yeah.
Zana goes into the GC lead by a single second, which is just from the bonies he took over Ulisi, and Pena wins the stage. So, and then stage five today was a hilly circuit. From Vrnjica to Novo Mesto, and they had the Triska Gora climb, 1.7Ks, 9.8%, with about 10Ks to go. And Moric and Zana went clear, and Moric won the stage, dedicating the stage to his fallen teammate, Gino Maeder, with his first win of the year in his home race, and Zana came second, so extending his gap over Mezguez and Ulis in the second group. So Zana wins GC. Moritz actually moves on to second because of that move and the bonies.
And
Ulis
the
third.
Stage before, Moritz took back 1 minute, 20 seconds or so on the last call of route descent to the front of the race. That is insane.
Well, yeah, steep descent, and they do it twice, so obviously saved a lot there. He was in the group with Wout Poels. So, yeah, good race for Jayco with, if I by my count, three stages and GC. And Peña also finished fifth in GC, so they'll be happy with that race as a dot pro too. So it's a decent points haul around for them. That's all from Slovenia, Benji. To round up, Balwaza.
Next gen?
Oh, did we talk about the people holding the cars earlier in the week? I can't remember.
Yeah, we did. Stonemitted won in Indiana.
Stonemitted wins GC. Not surprising, given his shape in some of the already in the men's races.
Mate.
For Jumbo Visma.
Dude rode World Tour races, what is it, 2 years ago in Algarve?
Yeah.
Like, why is he riding U23 races still? Just put the guy in World Tour. He's going to ride World Tour next year.
He is next year, like, yeah.
I don't know.
He did Tour of Norway, he did Bartoli, he did Gran Camino. Gran Camino, who's a domestique for Jonas with Valter. Another Norwegian 21-year-old, about 6 foot, and he's got a 3-year deal with Jumbo starting next year at World Tour level. I'm trying to think, did anyone, Lamperti, who I wanted to pick out was Rafferty from Hagensberman. He's 19-year-old Irish rider. He won Strade Bianche U23s last year, and fifth in Liège U23s. I think he's quite a nice rider, actually, and I'll be interested to see where he goes, Rafferty, whether he's ready to go, whether he does another year of U23. But to be honest, he'll be 20 next January, starting next January. I think he'd be ready to go to a World Tour team, and people will be going after this guy for his signature, Darren Rafferty.
Exactly. What was the Belgium Tour? Is the next one to line up? We saw, I think we already spoke about Philipsen winning the first sprint stage on our initial one. Then I think Jakobsen ended up winning stage two because everybody else crashed, or at least Philipsen and Ewan crashed. So it's still a good victory. He ended up sprinting against Vanderpool on a slightly uphill rise in Knokke Heist. I've ridden on that street, and I gotta say, it's a mountain for me, so it's a tiny hill for them. On stage three, it was time trial, I think?
Vanderskold won.
I didn't expect that. I did not see that coming. Really nice to see UNOX victory right there. Lampard second again, so doing pretty strong in these shorts.
They better win with the fucking helmet they use. The UNOX TT helmet, Jens. It's an abomination, man. But so you're lucky. I hope it's fast. It must be. he won. Lampard's good.
Van der Poel in GC because of that stage, if I recall correctly. Yeah,
yes,
1 second.
Yes, 1 second.
But yeah, let's be honest about it. Next stage, he launched an attack with 36 kilometers to go. Mathieu van der Poel dropped everybody. And that's how the story was written. And I don't know if today's stage has finished. It has finished.
Jakobsen won again. He beat Philipsen.
Okay. I was going to say, let's not spoil it yet. Maybe people haven't seen it yet, but my boy here, Jakobsen won.
So Thibaut Nace, second on the Healy stage that van der Poel won in a vintage solo, and third in this pure bunch sprint. Thibaut Nace, I'm telling you, this guy is really, I mean, it's not a surprise, like he's the son of Sven Nace, but he is really good.
Yeah.
Like he is like probably, he doesn't have the climbing of Gregoire, but his pure sprint and is better. And this guy has already won.
Who is he?
Two professional races this year.
Who is he? Is he a Sagan-like type then?
It's kind of similar like to Sagan when Sagan was really Liquigas? Skinny when he was 20 on Liquigas. Yeah. I mean, he's not done anything crazy like Sagan was doing there. But this is also his, he's a trainee last year. This is his first full year. So
yeah,
I think, and also now you're second and third in Balwaza Belgium Tour stages, but the level is so high now. And the person winning those stages, for example, in stage four is Mathieu van der Poel tuning up to try and take yellow in 2 weeks at the tour. And he's in good shape now. Stage five is Jakobsen, who's tuning up to win bunch sprints in the first week of the Tour de France. Like, it's a dot pro race, yes, but maybe compared to 12, 15 years ago, the level is really high at almost every race, Dopro, World Tour, whatever. I think in that Swiss race he won, he just torched Hirschi, Bilbao, and Haller in an uphill drag, like properly gapped them. So his 15 to 30 second watt per kilo is outstanding. And I'm interested to see, he's doing the Tour de Wallonie and then the Bingo Bongo Tour.
Yep.
That's his big target.
Bingo Bongo, everybody's favorite race except for Luxembourg, even though they're freeloading on that race still because Lux is still in the title. And we're still not going to Luxembourg. That race, I can't remember
It's called the Renewi Tour. Not in the title anymore.
It was the Benelux Tour. Now it's Renewi Tour, which is...
Yeah, it's been
renewed. Not going to make free advertisements for Renewi, so I'm not going to tell you what they are. If Renewi wants to sponsor the podcast and wants to us to tell what Renewi is, then you can gladly come along.
It's a waste of product company. Now, Benji, when I was a lawyer, actually, I worked on one of the first biofuels waste to energy projects in Western Australia. I don't know what's happened
with
it. I'm
so proud of you.
That's actually quite interesting.
We should do an entire podcast on it.
We could, maybe. And Tour de Suisse women, that's only two stages in. The first stage, Blanca Vache came back into good shape, beating Sierra in a small group sprint. And in the TT today, which is the same course, I'm pretty sure.
Yep.
The same course. Marlon Reusser beat her teammate again, Demi Vollering.
It was close, though. It
Eight
was like
seconds,
a time
yeah.
trial where it switched around every now and then. Because, like, I think Longo Borghini was ahead at T2. Reusser was ahead at T1 or something, and then lost ground towards T2. It was kind of fun to see, but in the end, Reusser with a somewhat expected victory, to be honest, because, like, this is her parkour, right? 20 kilometers, slightly hilly.
But it'll be interesting. There's no mountain stage coming out in the next two stages, Monday, Tuesday. So do they go for Vollering in the sprint? Does Reusser get to attack? I think if I'm SD Works, I let Reusser attack. Vollering sits in the group. And I think Reusser, given it's her home race, I think she'll be winning GC as the chosen rider for SD Works in this race, who can't stop winning. Anyway, that's all our news roundup from the week of cycling. We've obviously got pretty much a week and a half off, and then we'll have maybe Monday, Tuesday week, our Tour de France preview dropping. So hope you enjoyed the podcast. It's good we started off slow and maybe finished on a bit of a happier note. But yeah, unless something crazy happens transfer-wise during the week, you probably won't hear from us. But the news is that Benji and Luke and co will be coming back to Andorra for the tour, so we'll have live streams, etc. Yep. Unbelievable stuff.
Watch alongs are coming. Get ready.
Yep. Can't wait. Okay. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you in a week or so. Ciao.